Well, welcome to 2024 GeoGolf Convention, San Antonio, Texas. We come together as geoscientists, engineers, professionals in industry, and energy specific industry for the APG event, South Texas Geologic Society, focusing on the Gulf Coast, right? This specific part of the United States that's attached to the Gulf of Mexico. It's got all kinds of wild geology, the Balcones Fault Section, the history. These wells go back to the early 1900s out here. Shallow oil field capital of the world was San Antonio at one time. The history is amazing, and I find myself as a professional living here, and I just get to meet more and more of these folks that are just doing it. They're in industry. They're trying to apply modern technology, new ideas, meet that out at the front lines and apply it and make more oil, you know, or make more energy. If it's geothermal, if it's uranium, you meet a lot of different characters. And so we're all into that. We're all into that. And this event allows us to collaborate. I want to thank the sponsors just real quickly. The gold sponsor of Chevron, Gulf Tex Energy, and Occidental. The silver sponsors of Blackbrush Oil and Gas, Society of Applied Geoscientists and Engineers, Southwest Research Institute, and Stratigraph Energy Group, and of course TGS as a silver sponsor. Bronze is Diversified Well Logging, Drill Sage, Thunder Exploration, Herd Enterprise. All these booths we get to see, all these folks we get to hear and talk to, they're all probably thinking the same thing with machine learning and AI. And this is the idea of the panel discussion, right? If it's here, how are we using it right now? How is machine learning and AI being applied right now to help me make better decisions? What's interesting about that is I feel like right now it's becoming a lot more obvious of how powerful it really is, because all these platforms now, Adobe, right? Just yes. Reading a PDF document, the latest update, you can now click AI, pops up and says, what do you want to know about this document? Ask it whatever question you want. And it'll read through that document, pull the data, and give you a little synopsis of what your question was, right? That's so there is power in that. You could be prepared for a panel discussion in minutes because you can just kind of use that technology. I talk to people in industry right now, and they're all using it different ways. AI, machine learning, either help me with my legal documents, making sure I got my leases right, help me with a reservoir, making sure where I'm finding porosity and permeability is right. We see this whole spectrum, and AI and machine learning is definitely there. So please introduce yourself and give us a reason why you are a machine learning AI expert.
Well, please, after you.
Excuse me. My name is Deborah Sacri, and I've been a consultant for about 35 years. And used to be kind of on the software called Kingdom, which is an interpretation software package.
Oh, yeah, IHS back in the day.
Right, and it was developed by, well, it was even before IHS, it was developed by Dr. Tom Smith, who had a company called SMT.
Whoa.
Then he sold Kingdom in 2008 and to some venture capitalists who then flipped it to IHS. Okay. But after he sold Kingdom, he was still interested in staying in the industry, and as a PhD geophysicist, started playing around with multiple attribute neural analysis, machine learning, basically. And the type of machine learning that he has been working with, and he brought me in as the first geoscientist to work with the developers to make sure that it was geologically intuitive to use.
Wow.
So what we do is we do what they call unsupervised classification of data, or self-organized maps.
Okay.
So if you think about seismic data and you want to organize it, think about a file cabinet that you pull out the drawers, and there's folders that all have the same kind of information in them. Maybe one folder has your house payments. Maybe one folder has your electric bills. You have organized your mass of information and organized it into very succinct folder types. What we do with the seismic information is we tear it apart on a sample basis, not a wavelet basis, and we reorganize it into similar rock properties. So we use multiple seismic attributes, throw all this information into a data cloud, and let it come back to Earth because it all has an X, Y, and Z to it,
yeah.
And reorganize it into subsurface geology. So we've totally reorganized the wavelet information into something that you can interpret on a much finer detail in the subsurface.
Wow.
And I have been now using it for clients since 2013. I probably interpreted 20 or 30,000 square miles of data in the last 10 years.
Say that
all
again.
Over the world. 20 or 30,000 square miles of data.
Oh my goodness.
And have used it primarily in the Gulf Coast, but in Oklahoma, in Michigan. I've got two projects in Germany right now. I just finished a project offshore UK.
Are they looking for gas out there?
They're looking for gas and oil.
Right.
But sometimes they're just looking to understand the geology.
Oh, that's a big part of it, right.
So that's what I've been doing. Tom brought me in. He started a new company called Geophysical Insights. And the software that we've been developing is called Paradise.
Paradise.
No, he went from kingdom to paradise.
Kingdom to a paradise. Right. How about that? Yes. He's onto something. He's got a theme going.
Yes, here. He does. I don't know what's after paradise, but that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years.
Wow.
And I'm extremely busy. Whoa. Because a lot of people, 10 years ago, people didn't really understand what machine learning could do for you. But it's gaining steam.
Right.
And you know that there is, basically this software is just pattern recognition. It's cluster analysis.
Wow.
And they've been doing that on Wall Street in the medical industry for, decades.
Yeah.
So we're just applying it to the oil and gas world and using seismic attributes.
Sure. Yeah. Do something with all that data. Please introduce yourself, Jeremiah.
Thank you. My name is Jeremiah Myers. I currently work as the development leader for DrillSage. I've been working with them since their inception, actually. We're one of the bronze level sponsors of the convention, actually. I started out in the industry right around 18 years ago. When I first started, I was working for contractors and providing mudlogger support and support to people at the rig who were having issues with their satellite or computers. Mm-hmm. And I slowly ended up going deeper and deeper into the technical side, learning to develop, designing and developing real-time operation centers across the globe. And went from that, oddly, into consulting for operators directly, working inside of their RTOCs and working
with them. What's an RTOC?
Oh, I'm sorry. RTOC is a real-time operation center. So when we're drilling a well, we've got people who are frequently sitting inside of some office here or in Houston or wherever the corporate office might be, and they're watching all of these sensors that are making measurements at the rig.
Right.
And they can do that in real time now with just seconds delay, mm-hmm. as opposed to, back in 2000, you might have 30 seconds or more. There were systems where you're getting data every 5 minutes or maybe even greater.
I had a professor in undergrad who said that he was out offshore drilling in Alaska and he starts seeing the type of microfossil that says you're about to hit a blowout. And he's like, oh man, I'm calling it in. This is not good. And he's having to use a phone out in the middle of the offshore. And then he sees the rig next to him. He said, literally starts lifting out of the water because they were drilling faster than they were, right? They hit that zone and they didn't stop. They kept going. He's calling and he's going, we're stopping. And when he saw that, they shut everything down, But yeah, that's back in the day. Now they're doing it in real time.
Yeah, and actually, that's a pretty good segue. I mean, what DrillSage does is we're always looking out for drilling issues. So wellbore collapse or kicks and influxes, getting stuck in the hole, which is a huge cost for the industry. We're looking for early warning signs of those things. Wow. We're not looking to tell people, oh, this just happened. We're trying to tell people, if you continue on this path, there's a pretty good likelihood that this thing is going to happen. And we do that using linear regression, multivariate analysis, machine learning techniques, essentially.
Take all that information, see what mathematical relationships there are, compartmentalize all the relationships, see if they actually have a real relationship or not.
Right. We started with, we started working with a subject matter expert. The system is actually completely physics-based. When we began design, we worked with a subject matter expert who had 55 years of drilling operational experience.
Wow.
He's worked in 27 countries.
Whoa.
He's ancient. He's a great guy. I love him.
Now be careful.
You're nowhere near. Nowhere near.
No, you'd be surprised.
I think you're barely older than I am. he has a world of knowledge in his head. And when we started, he was able to tell me, look, these are the signs that we need to look out for. Jeez. This is what I need a system to do. But what we had to do is gather well data and put that to the test and confirm what he thought to be the case, purely based on his head. And there's a lot of old timers out still today they can watch the well, they can listen to the well, as they say, and they know when these issues are coming early.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got a brain drain going on. We're losing people, having a hard time attracting new people to the industry. And we need something to help with that experience that's disappearing on us, basically. And so systems like this, they're trying to mimic that through AI and machine learning. They're sorely needed.
Wow. Yeah, you're kind of crossing the both spectrums of where machine learning AI is, right? We need to capture all that information and wisdom and all that stuff. Use AI and machine learning to try to do that and get as much of that captured. But there's also the application of it, which is what you're doing. You're out there and making real-time decisions on that information and trying to make a better well or whatever it is.
So do you know the difference between AI and machine learning?
Oof. I mean, I'd probably butcher that too badly. I mean, if you really want me to kind of stumble all over myself, I will.
It's a question I have for you, but basically AI is something, and a good example would be to learn from an image. So I use AI when I'm doing automatic fault detection, and it has a model already set up where it can understand the image of what a fault is, and then it goes through your data and finds places where it can replicate that image. That's completely different from machine learning. Machine learning is actually the functionality of the statistics of the number crunching that has nothing to do with an image.
Wow. Yeah, pretty big difference.
And it's huge when it comes to the machine learning and interpretation that I do in the subsurface, because I use the AI application and use a fault model and say, go find me all the faults.
Yeah.
And then I use my attributes in combination with my fault with my fault volume, and I say combine the subsurface stratigraphy with the faulting so I can see it all in one package.
That's combining machine learning and AI.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It's great around salt domes.
Awesome. Does a pretty good job, huh?
Oh, absolutely. You can see new compartments that the human eye could never see. Whoa. And have opportunities to drill wells even on the top of salt domes that have been heavily drilled.
And it's this, is it more so that the AI is helping to never see something that the human eye could not see? Is it more the AI aspect of that, or is it both?
It's both, because the software that I'm using, instead of looking at the wavelet like a peak or a trough,
yeah,
it's doing its statistical analysis based on the sample rate. So if you have an envelope, say, from trough to peak that measures 30 milliseconds.
Okay.
And you have 2 millisecond sample rate in your data, it's parsing that data 15 times as densely.
Whoa, to make that.
So I can see ultra thin beds. I can see nuances in the data, unconformities that would be really difficult to see in normal wavelet amplitude data.
Right, got it. And you're making sense of those slight anomalies within the wavelet that could relate to a pore zone, a fault,
yeah,
or whatever.
I can see reservoirs on a scale thinner than anyone else can see.
Now, thinner than 100 feet?
Oh, yeah. I had a 2 million barrel discovery in Brazoria County a few years back where I was targeting a 7-foot-thick sand called the Alabel at 11,000 feet deep.
Wow.
So I was well below conventional seismic tuning at that point. And we drilled 7 wells in this fault block, targeting just that sand.
Wow. Gosh, I'd love to pick your brain about all the things you've seen.
Oh, I've got some case histories that would just blow your mind.
Man, that is really, really cool. Now, how much drilling have you done? Like, he's on the drill sage side of things. Drilling wells. You're picking points. You're calling intercepts.
I'm drilling wells all the time. I've got two spudding next month. I completed one last month.
Uh-huh.
I've got projects in Germany that we're getting permits on. I just had a discovery in Austria. So no, I'm working with my clients and getting wells drilled all the time.
Very active.
Yeah. Very active.
Wow. Okay. So when you hear machine learning AI, how are we using it now? Is the question, right? You're like, what do you mean?
I've been using it for 10 years.
Every day for 10 years.
Right.
Same with you.
Same for him.
I ran into it the first time in 2007. So, and I was not on the technical side at that point. So,
and that was really early in the stages of development.
Yeah.
For the technology.
Absolutely.
Except for what they've been doing on Wall Street.
That was back in the day.
Yeah. Okay. Pattern recognition.
And there have been other weird projects that have existed. A lot of these concepts aren't actually new. A lot of it is that we've gotten new hardware. We've gotten new capability from the hardware side.
Maybe
we've gotten new technology on a software side. The programming languages
more that we accessible.
Use, it's more much accessible.
More accessible. Accessible.
There are languages that exist in programming now that make it really easy to share snippets of code.
Python.
Python. Yes, that's if you know somebody who's into AI, they'll probably speak a lot about Python.
Sure. Yeah, you hear that.
There are other languages. It's not the only one, but just as technology advances, that's becoming a bigger and bigger part. More of your code base can come from other places.
So let me ask you, go ahead.
I was going to ask him, are you applying that your real-time technology primarily to horizontal wells, or is it conventional straight hole wells as well?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Yeah, and that's a lot of the complexity, actually, is being able to handle vertical and horizontal, also being able to handle slides while they're occurring without it tripping the system up, because we're looking for anomalies.
Right.
You know, we approach it from a physics-based level, and drilling is a balancing act. So what you put in is what you see come out. You're balancing the forces of the rig against the forces of the earth.
Yeah.
And so if you have a certain amount of pressure, and you've been pumping the same rate, spinning the pipe at the same rate, all of the things that you can do mechanically have stayed the same, and you see a pressure trend occurring, well, you have to ask, where is that coming from?
Yeah.
You know, probably a fault.
Or
you've done something in the well where maybe you're not where you should be. Maybe your weight isn't where it should be to actually contain the, pore pressure and fracture gradient. Maybe you're not in balance on your mud system. And there can be a number of different things, but our system then starts looking and says, okay, well, what are the other anomalies that we see here? And that's what we report out. So.
Very cool. Yeah. Because it takes a lot of the risk out of drilling.
Right.
And the whole thing about machine learning and artificial intelligence is to reduce the risk in this industry as much as possible.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. My brain was going there. My brain's also going into someone that's really just now starting to get into it. What are some of the fundamentals that people like you have really experienced this and work with it daily? What would you tell yourself year one, year two from your learnings, today? But before that, the risk thing, I thought that was, my brain also went there because that's a lot of what we do as consultants or geologists, or all exploration is about the risk. And you got to be able to put a story together, and there's going to be some level of belief in that story. There's truth in there, but then there's a belief to making an action item out of that. Yeah. And if you have a statistical approach and all that data is compiled and you're letting machine learning and AI get into that story that you're telling, you just can't help but to think that must be a great way to help the company make decisions and create activity for that company. Because what I think can kill companies is an inactivity. They're worried about it too much, and that in itself becomes a risk that they can't overcome, and then they just, the wheels fall off. You got to be able to have activity and make decisions, right?
Absolutely. And I think when I think about risk anyway, it's not long after that I'm thinking about mitigation. But how do you mitigate something that you don't know about, that you don't have data about? And so these tools can provide so much more data and allow for much more mitigation planning, and to even process out those concerns early on, so that you know what you're going to do when you hit those moments.
But a lot of this couldn't happen without having data in the first place.
Very true.
And absolutely. We're inundated with data. And you think about the trillions and trillions of bytes of information that we've generated with well logs and 3D and 2D seismic and hand-drawn maps over the last 60, 70 years. That you have to be able to utilize that data to put it together in some functional matter and then make sense of it.
Right.
Yeah. And to me,
that's what your old 55-year experience codger did.
Yes.
And this old 50-year experience codger is trying to do now.
I thought you were in the realm with me.
No, I just turned 71 years old.
Oh, no, I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
It's I'd true. Like to say it's clean living, but not necessarily.
Let everyone believe
that's,
it.
That's another discussion we have to
yeah,
have.
Yeah, I know.
That is so awesome. Oh, man.
But this technology literally will be changing the world. It's just beginning to get a lot of momentum. And you're seeing it through, you know, Amazon. I mean, oh, the, a person like you who bought this wants to buy this, this, and this, and this. That's pattern recognition.
Whoa.
That's been there for a long time. You know, all the big social companies are using some form of pattern recognition or AI. And it's only a matter of time before it is all of our lives. And the young people who are coming out of school or in school need to have some kind of data science behind them. Because that's going to give them, that makes them hireable in the future.
Right. Can you break down just some of the basics of what you mean by data science? Is it statistics? Is it, right? What do you mean?
All above. You know, big companies, Chevron, Exxon, those guys have massive amounts of data. And it's not all necessarily organized.
Right. Right.
And there's data silos. You've got this group over here that's been exploring this area. They have their own data silo. You have this group over here. They have their data silo. And what you want to try to do is get it into a data lake where everyone has access to information that they can use.
Sure.
It may be Guyana, but there might be something in Guyana that you can apply to onshore Gulf of Mexico.
Whoa.
So the data science aspect is understanding and organizing the information that's out there.
Right.
And then the application of keywords or search words or how to use the machine learning. You can use machine learning in understanding data science too. And use it to find information that's out there in this huge data lake.
Yeah, it's almost thinking as you're thinking, it's all paralleling itself and then all of a sudden it's finding relationships that you haven't made yet. And,
right.
Whoa. So if you could go back to yourself, you said 2008, you mentioned 50 years, still don't believe that, but you go back and you say, you know, machine learning, AI, I'm going to teach myself back then what it is. How would you explain it how do you start developing its power?
How do I start developing its power? Well, I think the first thing I would tell myself is to actually focus on it. I think that I spent a lot of time really focusing on the drilling side of things. How do we actually drill wells and learning that and kind of putting the data science homework to the side. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I really got to be exposed to another development team that was doing some pretty great stuff with machine learning that I really took a big interest in it and kind of became consumed by it. So I think, you know, I would tell myself to find the passion. I'm not sure that I could explain to myself what AI is now. And the reason I say that is because I tell people all the time that I think AI has become much a marketing term.
Sure.
Kind of like the word, the cloud.
Sure.
You know, the cloud used to mean something. And as it becomes more accessible, we start to use those words really freely.
Yes.
And I think that's what's happening to AI. And I used to get a little bit, maybe you could say, bent out of shape with people as we had technical discussions, but there's no need. I mean, it's just the evolution of the term.
Wow.
It just means something different than maybe we believed it did back then. But I think her explanation is probably what I would tell myself if I could be so elegant.
Well, and it, same 2008, when Tom sold his company and started the new company, he said, he called me up because I had been a Kingdom user for years and years. And was one of his developers, you know, as a consultant for Kingdom as well. So he called me up one day and said, "Hey, Sakri, you know how to write code?" And I said, "No." And he says, "Well, if you can't write code, can you help develop software?" And I said, "Well, Tom, you know I can do that." He said, "Well, you're getting into machine learning." And I'm going, "What?
Wow.
Never heard of that." Yeah. You know, and I'm proof that you can teach old farts new tricks or old dogs new tricks. Because you know, I tell everyone, the geoscientist world anyway, is if you don't get on this bandwagon, or if you don't get on the train, it will leave the station and you will be left behind.
Wow.
And if you want to continue a career, then you have to be up to snuff on the latest technology that comes out.
Mm-hmm. Anything with technology, I think that's so true.
But you hit a good point on computers. Because 20 years ago, I couldn't do what I'm doing now.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And it's you know, I've got a computer with a 40 terabyte hard drive.
Whoa.
Just because I generate so many attributes and so much information. But I couldn't do that 20 years ago. You know, when you had when you came out and you had a 64 meg memory.
Yeah.
And now I've got now I've got 512 gigabytes of memory, and I still use it up. You know, so it's a progression of the mechanical technology. Mm-hmm. It's a progression of the hardware. That's it, allowing us to do what we're doing with the progression of the software and the technology.
GPUs have been a big part of that. Just the what it brings to the capability of linear math, being able to do non-iterative type math, where you're not saying, you know, for every single row, do this action.
Yeah.
That's come from the hardware advances.
Yeah, I do a lot of the processing. I have the option of CPU or GPU processing.
Right.
Hmm. And for the more difficult statistical number crunching, I always use the GPU. And I found we did some statistical testing on timing on doing a neural analysis on, say, 100 square mile 3D. And it was 50 times faster than CPU.
Wow.
It just means you have to have a really good video card.
Right.
Or multiple video cards.
Have you heard of the company Geo Computing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought of that immediately when I was getting to listen to you guys' story. That seems like they could be very helpful and speeding things up, right? Making it even more powerful, because now that we get it, you know how to apply it. You're finding million barrel fields and 300 BCF or whatever it was that you mentioned. Like, you're applying it. So then if you can get yourself some tools that make you even more powerful and more faster, that seems like total competitive advantage for whoever gets the opportunity to work with you and help develop things with you. You would think geocomputing would be in your wheelhouse big time.
Absolutely, as it is with you.
Sure, yeah, I think that it, you know, I tell drilling engineers this all the time. You're looking at this wellbore from the start of drilling to the end of drilling. But there are a lot of people who are really worried about the full life cycle of this reservoir. And the things you do now are going to affect your company and this asset later on down the line. And sometimes really simple, stupid things can cause a reduction of what you get return over time. It eats into what you're making out of the wellbore.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. The last visual I get from all this is kind of an idea we put out there years ago through PBE was the kind of this battle between the progression of science versus technology, and then using a tennis match as an analog, but the ball is kind of like time. And technology will hit the ball, and it's like, boom, technology's there. When science hits the ball, it's very slow. The ball totally slows down. It takes time to get back. And then all of a sudden, bang, it's, you know, technology's there again. And I relate it to the curve that we've seen year and year and year in, year in, year out. The whole climate change and everything that we're talking about in the luncheon earlier today, he took the curve of the last 150 years of human usage of energy across the world, and it just spikes, and then he changes that spike into what made that energy, and it's your wood burning and your coal and hydrocarbons, and then the renewables, right? For years now, it goes back to just this little sliver. It just keeps being this sliver that's up there of what renewables is actually doing in the energy landscape. But I can't help to think that that sliver could be just a few years away with the right technology. Sure. We're looking at 150 years of time, and it seems like, oh man, oil and gas, there's no way it's going anywhere. I believe that because hydrocarbons are so vital to everything that we do and our understanding of human health and progression, sustainability. Hydrocarbons is a big, big deal. Why it's considered dirty is a whole nother subject that's totally debatable today in modern technology and modern concepts like fossil fuel. That whole idea is totally being disrupted. The fundamentals of where oil and gas is coming from, how it works in the universe, that's all being fundamentally challenged, and it's really, really good science that's disrupting that. That's exciting. That could change everything.
And to me, you know, what you know, thinking about what you're saying and thinking about a few years on a geological timeline anyway, you could be right. You know, we could be right around that corner. A geological timeline could be, you know, 4 years, could be 40 years, could be 400 years. Yeah. But, you know, those technologies are growing and growing more rapidly. But at the same time, I think technologies like this are also making the energy that we create from hydrocarbons cleaner.
Mm, absolutely.
The better we do what we're doing, the less pollutants we're putting out there.
Nice.
And that's around across the board.
And that's not from what I'm doing. That's mainly from what you're doing.
Right. And you know, I think we're a small facet of AI in the industry probably. There are probably, you know, a dozen and plus of companies doing AI things. And I think that's probably at least slightly true for all of us, because if you can improve a play, well, that's oil you're getting or gas that you're getting out of that play that you don't have to drill another well to get it. So
it can be more efficient in reservoir and drilling wells. But really the bottom line comes from how well the well is completed.
Yes.
And so you guys always have the last word. I may have the first word. You have the last word.
Wow. Interesting. AI and machine learning is used down the entire line, right? The timeline of logic and decision making.
They have machine learning and AI now for checking valves and pumps and everything in the field. So they can monitor if there's a little bit of a methane leak. It's permeating the upstream part of the industry dramatically and making it a lot cleaner and more efficient.
Wow. And exciting. You know, that's really exciting that you can, like Bardaz is a company that I talk to, and that's what they do. They'll go out to a drilling rig that is maybe not even set up with the right components to watch those kinds of things, but they can get it set up pretty dang quick. Mm-hmm. If that's important to you, that's a company that can go out there and make that recording happen, and then boom, in real time, you get whatever the data point is, weight on bit or burning up alkenes, whatever it is. So it's really, really impressive that it's accessible.
Right.
It's accessible. And then you got the years and years of information and people using it that makes sense of that information. On top of that, I think that's exciting.
I agree.
It is. But again, getting back to the younger generation, for them, this is going to be their technology.
Whoa.
And so they need to be in a position, just like, you know, I didn't grow up using my thumbs on a phone. I grew up typing, or I grew up, you know, handwriting things. Right. I've embraced this technology, and I've learned how to do this on a phone. But this is going to be the next generation's technology. Seismic was kind of my generation technology. And this, and the machine learning and use of the seismic and the data that we can acquire, well logs, that's going to be their technology.
Wow.
Real adoption.
Yeah. Well said. I really enjoyed sharing this time with you guys, getting to learn your stories, and I hope we will meet again several times in the future. Any final words for AI machine learning in the panel session?
No, I just think that, like I said, I'm excited for the work that I'm seeing done now, and the potential for what it can do to change my part of the industry in the future.
Wow.
And I'm excited for what you're doing, because again, that's the end result. I'm trying to get to a point where we're drilling a well, you're watching the well and making sure that it works correctly.
Right. Wow.
Absolutely. And I don't say that about engineers very often, but you know, there is a need.
Thank you. Well, I guess for me, I think I would tell everybody, let's make sure that as we adopt these AI systems, that we pay attention to transparency and interpretability. Mm-hmm. It's easy to sell a magic bullet, but there is no magic.
There is no magic. Go ahead.
I just think that's something that we all need to keep in mind, is that if you can't we can't build softwares that do things we don't understand how to do ourselves.
Right.
And so if somebody's selling you that, maybe that's not really what you will get.
Wow. It's a red flag.
Sure. Right. And speaking to what you said a little bit, I think, I don't think we're very far away from having GPT similar capabilities on each of our phones. You know, right now you have to go to ChatGPT server to talk to it. But those models, they're small models that are very close to being able to fit on very small devices and give pretty good results. Jeez. So I mean, I think that the younger generation will grow up with devices that have AI on it, and AI that can act as their tutor, that can walk them through class, and they'll grow up with this thing.
It will
help specialize what they're learning, what they're reading, what they're doing as they grow up. And we can't imagine what growing up in that life will be.
No,
we can't.
That's a whole new world.
We do not see that world.
One thing that I would like to make a comment on is that I have a lot of people ask me if machine learning is going to replace all the geologists.
Yeah, of course.
And my comment to that, especially in the type of machine learning I'm using to understand the subsurface, is the machine can spit something out. it takes a geologist and their brain to recognize what it's spitting out make sure that it's geological in nature. So we're still going to need interpreters.
Right.
But they're going to be interpreting a completely different kind of data than they've interpreted before.
Wow.
Yeah, we should look at it as a new tool, not a replacement of a human, but a new tool humans can use to prop themselves up and become more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, what makes the human aspect of everything is the uniqueness of our ability to problem solve with each of our own unique philosophies of problem solving. We all have a slightly different approach to, here's the problem, how am I going to solve it? The AI and machine learning is allowing us to spend more time there with that unique approach and that uniqueness of the human power than sitting there and looking at that data or mapping out all those anomalies within the 30 millisecond wavelet. You know, like you could spend a career just mathematically putting all that out there when the machine does it in seconds, and then spend a career interpreting and making decisions.
You can be creative and focus on being creative while the machine does all the legwork that you used to have to do.
Right.
Creative within reality, creative within a real geologic model.
Right.
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 Golly, it's good stuff.
Powerful stuff.
Wonderful times we're in.
Right on. Well, all right. You guys going to karaoke tonight?
Yes.
No. Rock and bowl.
Not this girl.
I didn't
bring any bowling clothes, for one thing.
I'm not putting
my foot in someone else's shoe.
Oh, yeah.
And singing, you know, I did my choir days in church many years ago.
Right,
this girl ain't going there. She's going for a glass of wine. And a good steak.
Nice. Well, that's awesome.
Priorities, right? As long as that's what's important to you. I will be there.
You'll be there?
Be there as well.
Oh, yeah. What's your karaoke? What are you going to sing?
We'll talk about that after
Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
Maybe that will be my song. I don't know. I'm not very brave. I like to watch and laugh, but it's tough to get me up there behind the mic.
Wow. Well, Jeremiah, Deb, thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
We enjoyed it.
For having us. It was a great time.
All righty.